You are now listening to the Patriot Power Hour. This live episode features the situational awareness you need to practice self-reliance and independence. Introducing your hosts, Ben, the Breaker of Banksters, and Future Dan, the editor of FutureDanger.com.
Patriot Power Hour 222, Tuesday, live, 8.07 p.m. Eastern. It's Ben, the Breaker of Banksters, here with Future Dan. Future Dan, so much going on in the news today. What's right at the forefront here for you today?
Yeah, we're going to talk about Russia. We have to, but I'm not sure it's the most important thing going on right now. It's part of an ecosystem of a lot of things that are quite dangerous going on in our environment, and we got to talk about it, obviously. But I wanted to go with economics in this first segment of Patriot Power Hour and ask you, what's your perception on how to talk about cryptocurrency in relationship with preparedness? And then spend a little bit of time talking about, we got Bitcoin at 30,000. It's quite low. It was at twice that only 100 days ago, right? So it's dropped 50% in value in 90 to 100 days. But before, hearing like why that might have happened and what it entails to the macro economies of all the nations of the world, why should or maybe not should preppers, why should they ignore or why should they pay attention to cryptocurrencies?
Well, that's a perfect plug for the continuity membership, because I did a full, 20-minute primer on cryptocurrency, which includes Bitcoin, but other aspects of the blockchain technology, distributed ledgers, and all that fun stuff. So definitely, if you want to listen to 20 minutes of this, go there for maybe the few-minute version and how it relates directly to prepping. A couple ways. Number one, with no electricity, no internet, you obviously are not going to be able to use NFTs or tokens or cryptocurrency or Bitcoin or smart contracts. So that's pretty straightforward. You're expecting no internet or no power for quite some time. That portion of crypto will be out. However, I personally take a prepping approach that's kind of tiered, or almost like a nestled doll, where, yeah, I have preps when there's no electricity and I have lots of food in the base of that survival pyramid. But, maybe the entire system won't collapse. It'll be a slow burn, or just the tightening of the noose slowly but surely by the government, by the tax collectors, by the oppression. But there'll still be the internet, and there will still be kind of underground economies, right? True free market underground economies that cryptocurrency could really thrive in. Of course, you can have cash, and today even NBC guy talked about how he definitely keeps cash around for when the ATMs go out or the grid goes down, and precious metals and other bartering. But assuming there is a grid, I feel like cryptocurrency is a great aspect for a regular prepper.
So you're thinking in terms of an asset, and I'm thinking of it in terms as a means to interpret what the news environment means. And I think they both have a role. You're right. No power, no crypto, at least until it comes back on. And then maybe if authorities haven't figured out a way to ban it. But between here and there, right, you prepare because there's always potential of catastrophe, disaster, collapse. And tonight with Bitcoin, half of what it was 90 days ago, is there anything you can read from that? Like, why is it happening? And what could be a sign that, maybe you don't own crypto, you don't believe in it, you're not going to buy any, but you still might want to pay attention to what it's doing, right?
For sure. So just from a information point of view, not investing it or using it at all. First off, Bitcoin's almost exactly where it was this time last year. So it's gone between 35,000 up to 69,000, back to 33,000, up to 45,000, and now down to 38,000 right now. A lot of volatility, tons of volatility. So my academic training says there's so much volatility, it's hard to really take a read on. However, I will say that a lot of Bitcoin's rise in the last couple of years was because Wall Street and the hedge funds and the big-time speculators starting to get into it. But it's easy come, easy go. I feel like a lot of them have already sold out because of you, as we will be talking about, and you may have noticed, the stock market's dropped, I think, 4 or 5-plus days in a row. The Dow was down 482, down today with 1.4%. Obviously not as big of a thrashing as Bitcoin, but Bitcoin's almost a leading indicator. So long story short, the fat cats on Wall Street would much rather sell their Bitcoin options than their stocks. But I think most of that type of big money is out of Bitcoin by now. And now they got to dig into some of their other assets to sell, or they're getting a little more fearful. And now they're going to start potentially unloading a lot of other assets. So I think Bitcoin and crypto is very volatile. We can obviously talk about the deterioration of the value of the dollar. But I feel like inflation tells that story better than anything.
What do you think? You don't think all institutional money is out of crypto right now. Can't all be out, right? Because it was only holding the $20,000 handle at best when we started Patriot Power Hour in 2017. So, I mean, it's not all out, right?
No, of course not. But I feel like, and this is not scientific evidence, but many, many more people, and I mean real people, own, you know, 1/10 of a Bitcoin or 1/20 of a Bitcoin or even 1 Bitcoin or even more. You know, an average person out there. Many more have wallets and use it now than 2017. So I feel like that natural price would be up. Plus you have the halvening, without getting too technical. But yeah, there's still some room for it to drop, that's for sure. But I feel like a good portion of this volatility is the Wall Street folks just leveraged really high, dumping, but also buying. I mean, we've seen it zoom up a lot. So I do feel, though, that the price of oil going up and the other inflation, that is just as telling. But some people could say that crypto is a sign of massive inflation. What if all the money that went into crypto went into gold and silver? What would gold and silver be right now? That's a question for you.
Right. The VIX, the volatility index for stocks, is at 22 handle tonight. So relatively tame. It's in the 20s, but relatively tame. So we're not seeing a crisis on Wall Street per se. You know, today the Dow was down 700 points or 2% briefly before gaining a lot of that back, and but still down for the day, but not anything like a crisis crash type event. Right. This whole situation in Russia could be used as a pretext or might actually provoke something. Certainly a name of Russian information operations would be to provoke this type of thing. You know, just out of the fear factor, if they could get it that way on Wall Street. So we're watching all this closely. We could be talking about a blowout collapse within a week or not. And that's a frightening kind of news environment to live in. There's just no telling, you know, a week from now where we'll be. That, I think, is why you got to pay attention to Ukraine. You got to pay attention to what the powers that be are doing, because it could come back and directly affect equities. And where are we next?
And there's so much. Oh, another anecdotal conversation, but we had, let's just say, like an HR meeting, seminar, whatever, about retirement. They brought it up as one of the topics on the agenda at work. And they were like, oh, don't, you know, maybe you've seen your 401k, or maybe you've been purposefully not looking at it because it's doing badly. And everyone was grumbling, yeah, it's not doing well. I'm like, they haven't even started to see the fluff cut out of equity prices right now, let alone real recession, depression, stagflation, destruction of people's 401ks in the market. But you'll be rest assured that the banksters are doing everything they can, at least currently, to keep this stuff propped up. And with literally trillions and trillions of fraudulent fiat currency Federal Reserve notes printed in the last couple years, that could easily be plunge protection team keeping the stock markets up right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're framing it maybe perhaps too kindly. If you have a 401k and it loses a lot of value suddenly now, I'm not sure that's destruction of wealth, because it was from debt monetization in 2008 that prevented it from happening then, right? So, you know, we all, you and I at least, agreed for a long time, everything should have got properly reset. There should have been a correction, should have been a fair market. There should have been tremendous losses by all kinds of parties in 2008. And somehow, for now 14 years, they've kind of strung it along.
And they strung it along by essentially tripling the national debt, bringing interest rates from 5% to 0%. And massive amounts of deficit spending and all types of other BS. So they still have a little bit more runway, I think, and they're using. But I feel like they're really using a lot of their efforts right now to potentially keep this from cascading. I don't know. You still think they're going to raise rates 4 or 5 times this year? I mean, they've sure talked about that a lot, but we'll see if they even do it once.
Yeah, I think they're committed to doing it. And it might break everything simultaneously. And don't think that people in Moscow aren't looking at all of this and planning off of it for their own regional, you know, purposes.
I think
weakness
great
invites this sort of thing. And, you know, if we had a financial collapse, if you're Ukrainian or Taiwanese, you got concerns about your future that most other places on the planet don't.
Well, thankfully, here in America, we're not worried about war literally breaking out, although with the Civil War, breakdown of society and theft and crime, it darn near has. But we are going to break. I want to, of course, point out PrepperBroadcasting.com. Go visit PrepperBroadcasting.com. We got a store. You can subscribe to all the different hosts and the different shows. Check them all out. PrepperBroadcasting.com. We'll be right back.
Here at the Prepper Broadcasting Network, our mission has expanded, and we have decided to use our influence to aid in disaster recovery. PBN is offering up our airwaves to nonprofits and boots-on-the-ground organizations that are affecting disaster recovery. The real people out there rebuilding lives. From organizations that reestablish the supply chain to those who deliver aid and even organizations that rebuild shattered homes and lives. The future of disaster response does not lay in the hands of some government organizations. No, it's up to us, Disaster Coffee. It only makes sense that PBN would partner with Disaster Coffee. Disaster Coffee is selling outstanding coffee that is roasted to order and shipped right to your door. A portion of their profits will be directly donated to disaster recovery organizations like Grindstone Ministries, Healthcare Ready, and Citizens Assisting Citizens. Disaster Coffee sources top quality beans that are roasted to order. You get coffee at its very best, but you also make a difference with every purchase. Disaster Coffee offers every customer the ability to join the national disaster relief effort. Get yours at DisasterCoffee.com.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
Patriot Power Hour here with the News Blitz for this February 22nd, 2022. Episode 172 of the Patriot Power Hour, FutureDanger.com. Follow along. Here we go. The CDC admits to hiding COVID data over fears of misinterpretation. This is actually the most actualized article on the entire dashboard. Yeah, there's a lot of severe news about COVID and Ukraine and other items, but right here, CDC admitting to hiding the data because of the fears of misinterpretation. Students strip searched for vaping devices in Wisconsin. Moving on to the second column, which is full, of course, of Russia and Ukraine news. Let me just run right through the headlines. Ukrainians and pro-Russian separatists trade artillery fire. Secretary of State says Russians might use chemical weapons attack before invading Ukraine. Russia expels the American deputy chief of mission from Moscow. Russia adds 7,000 more troops near Ukraine border. Last week and actually throughout the weekend, Russia exercises strategic nuclear missile forces. And then, of course, yesterday, Russia recognizing the breakaway republics of Ukraine, sending in 10,000 plus troops into contested areas in under 12 hours. Donetsk and Luhansk regions occupied by peacekeepers, in quotes. Russian parliament authorizes Donbass deployment and use of military abroad. Russia signs treaties to build military bases in breakaway Ukrainian regions with their separatist leaders. Hungary sending troops close to the Ukraine border, many other countries as well. U.S. orders infantry battalion task force, attack aviation battalion, and stealth strike fighters to the Baltic states and Poland. Seeing some activity in the Mediterranean as well. Citing threats of violence at the embassy, Russia evacuates diplomats from Ukraine. U.S. and Europeans further sanction Russian oligarchs and banks, including sovereign debt and the ruble. Trade war, currency war, world wars, how it can go. Secretary of State abruptly cancels meeting with the Russian foreign minister as Ukrainian president calls up reserve forces. Government Accountability Office says Defense Department is ill-prepared for Chinese war on the other side of the world. Don't forget, we still have Russian Taiwan going on. Pretty quiet right now. But we do have the Government Accountability Office saying that we're not very well prepared for that, let alone on both fronts, potentially. Meanwhile, Middle East, Israel carries out surface-to-surface missile strikes south of Damascus. Iran digging a new unbombable nuke facility. We'll be talking a little bit more Ukraine-Russia down the line, but let's move on for now. Economics. Brent crude prices briefly surged to $99.50. Currently, we're seeing the New York WTI, West Texas Intermediate, $88 per barrel. Dow drops more than 700. But does have a little bit of rebound, closing at 483 points. But again, last week was a beatdown. Bearish bets against markets are surging. Now, here is... it's taken long enough, in my opinion, but inflation really is starting to show its ugly, ugly head. Used cars are up 40% in price year over year. 40% for used cars. Wow. Soaring lumber prices add nearly $19,000 to the cost of a new home. So yeah, home prices are going up, but the cost of buildings going up equal or more. The cost to heat them is going up too. Oil, natural gas, aluminum, copper, cobalt set to explode if the Ukraine crisis escalates. Natural gas in Europe is already just getting blown away due to the shutdown of Nord Stream. CPI, we're seeing that 1.5%. You know, that's 6%+ annualized. Go to your boss and say, hey, if I don't get a 6% raise this year, I'm losing money in real terms. If and when they start paying you more, that's when hyperinflation stick starts to really kick in. Prices of unleaded gas up 40% from January as well. So not only used cars up 40%, but gas is up 40% year over year. And in L.A., $6 a gallon for gas. Can you believe it? Where I'm at, it's just at about $3.50, a little under. But wow, L.A. with all the taxes, but still other issues as well. $6 a gallon. Nationwide, it's $3.38. In the red zone, but kind of static. We'll see if this recent increase in oil leads to some increases in gas in the coming weeks, especially as we head into the spring and summer. Mortgage rates soared to levels not seen in nearly 3 years. Median home sales, the price change over the last 90 days, it's about flat. Actually down slightly, but we're seeing some conflicting numbers, but really, in the end, from what I've seen, it shows that the housing market maybe has plateaued a little bit. It's up huge in the last few years, but some of that steam might be running out, especially if the interest rates go up. Finally, nature and health, a.k.a. the COVID. Most COVID articles the last couple years. Supreme Court rejects challenge from religious objectors to the state of Maine's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. H5N1 bird flu spreads to more states. A couple earthquakes, 6.2 in Guatemala, 6.8 in Fiji. And the weekly volcanic report, we saw a couple big eruptions in the last 6 months, but not much recently, knock on wood. Oh, I just realized I missed a couple articles on the economics just to finish up. Gold is above 1900, so while Bitcoin has been getting battered, gold up to not record high, but pretty strong above that 1900 mark. And a couple more real quick. The FBI to investigate companies for illicit profits. Remember I said the FBI is going to be tightening the noose, IRS too, on everyday Americans' finances. Finally, Russian cyber attacks targeting banks, power plants, water treatment facilities, and satellite communications if a hot war really starts to kick off in Ukraine. Future Dan, that was a heck of a news blitz. A lot of stuff going on. What really hit home? We got a couple minutes. We'll go to break and come back.
And counter moves that, you know, foreign ministries, state departments, in conjunction with defense ministries, departments of defense, you know, what they plan out. And I don't know if we can have another crisis where all the little moves, this diplomat is removed, this diplomat is expelled, you know, it's all been thought about. It's all been, war-gamed and considered. And now on the world stage, you got, you know, the Russians looking pretty confident on what they're doing next. And NATO really can't do a lot about a region that was essentially, you know, seized by, you know, ununiformed Russian troops backing up Russian native, you know, not native, but, you know, new Russia, right? It was a colonized area. Of the Ukraine was, right? Crimea and the portions that in the Donbass, those were settled by Russians centuries ago. And the peoples there, you know, are, you know, you know, if you listen to what Russia has to say, in favor of joining Russia, the Russian Federation. Well, major step towards that today. And all the troop movements, all the deployments, all the this, all the that could just be, you know, textbook reactions that these major states have to take. Or you can read like the things that happened right before a major war, right? And we're living that history.
I try not to be too pessimistic, but quite often these days I feel like we're in 1937 or 1939 or, from an economic point of view, 1928 or hell. Sometimes I feel like we're already after the stock market crash. It's just we're living in fantasy. We're in really in the Great Depression, but I don't know. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. We're going to break. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more national security aspects. We've got a lot of other items to talk about, though. So whenever one specific topic really hits home or is really, really being more like driven by mainstream or even alternative media, I like to look at what else is out there. So we'll do that when we come back.
Now the plan for the fate of man, eliminate all of us. Hope and pray these criminals take a fall.
We are the Prepper Broadcasting Network.
All right, we are back. Patriot Power Hour. Oh, man. Right before we came out of the break, I was feeling a little sorry for myself, thinking, oh, man, I'm sick of this. Why do we got to keep fighting these people? Why do they keep messing with us? And then I kind of came to the realization, or, you know, I already know this, but I'm like, no, stop being a pansy. We got to freaking get fired up because stuff is getting extremely serious. So now is not the time to give up or be like, oh, I'm tired, or oh, I get this is hopeless. Now is actually time to probably quadruple down. So, man, I think maybe need to start doing more shows per week. But anyway, no rest for the weary there, Future Dan.
Yeah, everything changes if war starts. And I don't doubt that there's some people that are looking for an out. I was commenting to you as well over the break that finding any column one liberty type constitutional issues, anything in that zone is hard right now. There's just not a lot out there. It doesn't mean that, you know, our, you know, rights and privacy and, you know, just constitutional government and threats to all of that have gone away. Same in column four, you know. The two big indicators that have been hot constantly for, you know, the last year are vaccinations being forced and the ineffectuality of the vaccines, if not the the dangerous effects of the vaccines. And that news tonight is hard to come by. This situation in Eastern Europe seems to have created a sort of a vacuum or a vortex where news outlets just aren't paying attention to other stuff. And I'm not talking about, the adversarial media, CNN and the rest, the mainstream, the corporate. I'm talking about alternative media, too. It's hard not to be paying attention to this.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty much on par with the Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't know if we necessarily have, nuclear forces, right up against, Russia's neck on all borders like what happened in 1962. But it could be happening. I'm sure that air forces off of Alaska, the Pacific, and certainly, on the borders in the West are on high alert. Moving those forces into the Baltics is, some of these steps are unprecedented. And also behind the scenes, what kind of weapons have been shipped to the Ukrainians? These are all things that the Russians are paying attention to. They're not entirely certain that this won't lead to war either.
Absolutely. And I know NATO's given them a hell of a lot of legit weapons. They even bragged about how they gave them billions and billions of Javelin anti-tank missiles and then anti-air missiles and all types of other funding.
Well, that was announced a week ago. It was our weaponry. The Javelin is our anti-tank weapon that has been provided to Poland. And Poland can't, hand it to the Ukrainians without our authorization. So what kind of weapons have flooded into Ukraine? And is Russia really just, making, as a matter of fact, what they seized, in 2014 when Crimea was taken? So this could all just evaporate into a story we talked about in February and becomes the status quo. And, war could break out. They could invade and basically stack the capital of Ukraine within hours. And what is NATO doing then? I know that the NATO allies in the East, with three Baltic states, Poland, Hungary, and Romania, that border Ukraine and or Russia or Belarus, they're really serious about this. I mean, they're seeing that aggression right on their doorstep.
One thing I'm particularly concerned about is some other actor. Let's say, there could be all different examples, but this would be a perfect time for China to get in there and interfere and try to set, whether you call it a false flag or just some sort of, diversion attack that could spark something else. And I also wanted to point out, we're really talking about Ukraine and tanks and helicopters here, but we don't want to just fight the last war. A true, maybe even the number one battlefield will be not only propaganda, but in space and with the grid and communications. And if the internet went out in America for 1 week, I swear, people would lose their mind. It would be such a problem. So, long story short, hopefully we're not at our throats from a nuclear standpoint like Cuban Missile Crisis, but I got a feeling all of these countries' cyber assets and space assets are probably as close to being used at full force as ever before in the last 20 years, right? Does that make sense?
I think the cyber war is full force right now, for sure. There's Russian banks that are getting knocked offline, right? It's going both ways.
Oh, yeah. No, we're not going to just be here sitting and taking it. And by us, I mean, America or the West or NATO or whomever. I don't know. I just feel like when there's so much, tension and assets and heavy power, heavy firepower on both sides, so close to each other. All it takes is a misunderstanding or someone framing someone else, and stuff could go wrong before it can be fixed, and it just escalates. So I don't know. I feel like we're way beyond where we were, what, in 2014 with Crimea, and way beyond really any other in my lifetime. I obviously was not around during the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I feel like this is the closest it's been to war with Russia since I've been around.
Yeah, I wasn't around for the Cuban Missile Crisis either, just for the record. But the 80s were pretty tense, of course, you know, with labor uprisings in Poland and, you know, Soviet army still occupying East Germany, Poland, and all these states, right? The memory of that isn't lost on, you know, the countries that border Russia. And there's part of this where, you know, we have a commitment to those allies, right? Now, I don't necessarily agree that we should have tried to extend that kind of commitment into Ukraine for obvious reasons. There's Russian-speaking separatist people in that country that may well have been provoked to, you know, do the separation, which the Russian parliament, you know, they recognized it today, right? So, you know, there may have been other ways to do this. It may have been inevitable. And I would really like to not be talking about the Ukraine from a week from now, but if there's bloodshed and that country gets overrun by very modern, very capable Russian forces, I don't anticipate that, you know, we're going to war for that, right? But there's a lot of territory right on the border with Russia. If any of those events that you're talking about, the false flags, you know, provocations, you know, end up resulting in direct combat with a NATO ally, it's a whole new world. The 21st century just switched. I don't think it would necessarily lead to nuclear war, but things would never be the same.
That's for sure. All right, we got a solid 17 minutes left. We might go for a two-minute break, so let's just say 14 minutes left. What else you want to talk about? Let's put Ukraine, Russia to the side. We could talk a little bit of COVID, or we could put that to the side and talk about some other topics. What you want?
Well, I want to talk about the used car prices, 40% up in a year. I have to believe part of that is a reaction by the consuming population of automobiles to avoid certain features of the newest cars that seem to, you know, remove your control, right? So, for example, you know, if you happen to own a Tesla, you need the software updated. There's been reports, and you know, obviously if it's not, you know, patched, basically your car needs patches, right? All the way down to, you know, many, many simple features of modern cars that resemble, you know, very restrictive computer policies, right? You used to be able to do so much more on, you know, Windows machines that you bought, and it's, you know, every operating system update from Windows clearly takes away your control of your machine further and further. I think that's happening with cars. Of course, you know, from a preparedness standpoint, you can talk to the NBC guy about this, and he has spoken to us about it on this show. You know, you got to go back to the, you know, early 80s, probably into the late 70s, to have cars that would be immune from an EMP attack because they weren't built with catalytic converters and other components that can get fried out with an aerial nuke burst that, you know, fries the electronics. But more practically, just in your day-to-day lives, I mean, I own a car that's, you know, fairly new. And, you know, within a few years, I'll give you probably a stupid example, Ben. You know, the key fob, right, to get into the car because it's keyless. You know, that thing, you know, just quits on you. What do? You know, well, now I'm going to the, you know, getting it replaced at the dealership, and it cost me $75, right? When for decades, all you needed was a metal key, and it worked forever on the car, right? I think used car prices, not entirely, not even, you know, in the majority of that price increase is from these you know, just control, you know, aspect. But I think there's a segment of the consumer base that says, I'd rather go for a 2008 where I don't have to deal with, you know, just being locked out of it. You can't repair these cars anymore right. without a $75, you know, test kit that can run the codes and unlock the engine to be worked on, right? I think that the direction that they've tried to force consumer behavior on cars is not necessarily being accepted by everybody and driving up that price.
And first off, great point. Second, even if it's not the consumer sentiment, it's the fact that all these cars need those semiconductors, as we've talked about. A good reason why the new car market is not going so well is all the semiconductor shortage. There are, what is it here, more than 50,000 F-150s that have not been completed that are parked at the Kentucky Speedway. And again, I bring up a story from work where an auto manufacturing company I work with said, look, you guys all should wait until those semiconductor chips are actually imported, because F-150s will hit the market and the price will go down. I don't really expect that to happen. But long story short, all this technology has put huge bottlenecks in the supply chain. But of course, we know there's a trade war going on and COVID. But all that has kind of combined where even if they can make the car in America, there's still component parts, almost all of them electronics, for all the crap you're talking about. And therefore, the trucks can't be used. And then people need to go buy used cars, which means massive inflation. So there are multiple aspects going on for sure.
What else is piquing your interest in the news tonight, Ben?
Let's see. I got more of a sociological question maybe for you. This is just kind of coming out of left field, but it's related to a lot of what we talk about. There's an article in The Atlantic, a globalist rag, that, in fact, some ultra introverts are loving COVID. They're challenging a core assumption of psychology that all humans need social connection. So that kind of brought me to what kind of damage, or at least changes to society, especially the younger generations, are we going to see from this couple years of social isolation and all this weirdness? But then, you know, you can add more to that and talk about this world where debt is the only way to get ahead. These young generations, that's all they see. Are they going to reject that? Or are they going to buy right into it and it's going to be game over? You got any thoughts on that stuff?
I don't know about the debt. I think there's lots of people that are waking up the idea that in the long run, it's, you know, all it is you're paying interest to somebody that isn't your wealth. But, yeah, COVID definitely helped make weird people weirder, right? I think that's probably true. It's not going to be good in the long run for children in the first 5 years of life who, you know, all they can remember, they, you know, from their earliest memories, they had to wear a mask places. Maybe we're overstating it, because in the long run, 2 years is not that long. But then again, if it was your third and fourth year of life,
right?
You know, that's imprinted permanently too. So, I mean, I can remember the way things were and sometimes when things weren't. I'm lacking for a great example, but I can remember back when I was that young. And had I had to worn masks in school, it would have stuck with me for the rest of my life. It's probably like kids that were very young grade schoolers during World War II. They knew that something was completely abnormal and they were, you know, saving the aluminum foil off of the, you know, gum wrappers and returning it to collection sites to help the war effort, right? You know, conserving at home, you know, using less energy, less gasoline, you know, the gardens, putting the gardens in your their house to help the food supply. I mean, that struck a whole generation that had come out of the Great Depression in a certain way that lasted most of them for the rest of their lives. This COVID pandemic and the reactions to it are going to do that to the generation that's behind us then.
Really has to, I think. I'll be the first to admit I'm somewhat of an introvert, and I've become much more introverted or stay at home. I'm fighting that to some degree, but you almost get caught in a trap where it's like, oh, well, I can still have a lot of social activities online, like doing a radio show with you, although this isn't really a social activity, but you can still stay in your house 23 hours a day, just like a prison cell, but still sort of socialize. It's not the same for a human adult, but a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 20-year-old even, like, I don't know. I think it's really going to, unfortunately, mess with them. But that's where it comes up to not letting the state parent you, or parent your children, more like, because there are a lot of places in America where they didn't stand for this sort of scare tactics and mask mandates and all this other stuff, and, you know, those children may not be as affected as bad. Whereas I'm sure kids that grew up in, let's just say, New York City or some other bastion of freedom, not really, they're going to be affected a lot more. And my last point is the school I went to when I was younger, let's just say 1990 to 1995, elementary school, was not, I would say it's probably a little liberal, but it also wasn't, I don't hope not, a brainwashing factory like many these days. But they definitely hit home over and over on Earth Day and how we were hurting the Earth, but we could save it if we recycled. So the amount of climate change, crank that up with the COVID plus all this other stuff. I mean, I would be homeschooling myself personally, given the climate out there. But I don't know. I guess each generation does face its crazy crises, yeah. like you said.
Yeah, that sociology aspect that you just brought up, that there's going to be people that were, you know, pre-first grade, their memories of this, you know, 10 to 15 years from now, if you grew up in Texas or you grew up in Illinois, are going to be so, so divergent.
Yeah.
In ways that has never been accomplished in this country's history. Just, I know growing up in the North versus the South, you know, before the Civil War would have been quite different experience. Right. But, you know, so it's always been partly true in this country, but just the magnitude and velocity of control, it is so starkly different in certain places in the country. And it's not stabilizing. It's not a uniting, you know, phenomenon in our country's history, that's for sure, which makes it dangerous.
Oh, for sure. And kind of to bring it full circle, end of the night, you were talking about how maybe the first and fourth column didn't have as many articles tonight as previously, or, you know, as normal. But I was also thinking, when you were saying that, I don't know why, but I had this visualization of, well, once all the homes are burned down, there's not much more fire going on. It's like, okay, once they've torched the Bill of Rights, there probably won't be too many articles about how it's destroyed. And, of course, we do have some rights left, and we're fighting for it. And but I also feel like, well, almost nothing we've talked about has reversed or gotten better. Maybe it's just gone dormant. But on the other hand, once as they continue to progress, taking out all these issues, I mean, I just feel like maybe there will be less articles because, you know, it's a scorched earth policy. There's not much material left to burn.
Yeah, well, you're a glass half empty kind of guy tonight, aren't you? Think about our freedom in this country as it continues to exist compared to nearly every other place on the planet, right?
True.
Think of it as the glass is half full, and, you know, there are statists and globalists that would, you know, are seeking to empty that glass and render us like a, you know, a subject population that, You could probably point to any number of Western European countries to see it, or for that matter, north of our border. But we're not there yet, but it's going to take a major, abrupt, panic-driven reset to empty that glass a little bit further. And that's what we're here for, Ben, to warn people, keep everybody actively thinking about, you don't look this way while something else is happening behind your back.
Absolutely, absolutely. The reset is mathematically certain, economically. It has to happen. It's just, are we going to be able to parlay that into a renaissance? Or is it going straight to the dark ages? I mean, it's going to be rough either way. But I got some hope. I do. So I'll say half glass, one-third full, maybe. How about that?
Yeah, well, the Roosevelts had the square deal followed by the New Deal. And the only thing I'm certain of is the next time the economy collapses, you're facing a bad deal. And how bad it is in direct proportion to how many people are fully aware of what got us into this mess with the modern monetary theory and how to oppose it early, right? Or you could just be a Fox News viewer who loves to point out the hypocrisy of your political enemies and whine and complain months later that you got done wrong. I'm kind of, right, not in favor of that scene, at least not anymore.
No, man, exactly. Well said, well said. All right, I think that's going to do it for episode 172. Future Dan, another great show. Where can people find you?
Hit me up on Twitter at FutureDanger6. Yes, I'm still on Twitter. I'm not going to see that battleground. Not that easily.
Awesome, awesome. Myself, Bankster Breaker on Twitter. I've had a few of you reach out to me, including my friend in Sweden sent me a message today. And also, I think dethronethebanksters@gmail.com. Send me some articles you'd like reviewed, questions, guest suggestions, etc. All right, with that said, I think we're going to make way for the Next Generation show. Future Dan, we'll talk next week, all right?
Good show, Breaker of Banksters. Good show.
You too, sir. Have a good one.